Hello, I'm Winifred Robinson, and you're listening to The Girls Britain Betrayed, Child Sex Exploitation in Rotherham. In the next hour, you'll hear how girls in this town in the north of England suffered 16 years of sexual abuse. You'll hear disturbing accounts of beatings and gang rape, of trafficking and threats that went on for years, all happening to children, some as young as 11, in the heart of the UK. The perpetrators, gangs of British Pakistani men. 1,400 children abused.
That is such a staggering figure that that is why journalists from across the world have descended on this small northern English town in the past week. This is why girls from Rotherham are finding themselves on the front page of the New York Times.
Women have given harrowing accounts of what happened to them.
I would get raped once a week, every week, and then they started to make me have sex with whoever wanted to come and have sex with me.
This programme examines how children have been sexually exploited in England's northern town of Rotherham, how the authorities there got the protection of children so badly wrong.
Child victims were often blamed for what had happened to them, while no action was taken against the perpetrators. It did not seem to occur to many of those involved that any kind of sexual activity with a child is a crime.
And we ask why authorities were so unwilling to accept evidence that groups of Pakistani men were exploiting girls for sex. Why one researcher investigating child rape was told,
"You must never refer to Asian men." And her other response was to book me on a two-day ethnicity and diversity course.
Later in this programme, The Girls Britain Betrayed, we'll be exploring how race and politics to do with race were a factor in the failure to rescue large numbers of children from violent sex abuse. How could such serious crimes go unpunished for so long in a country that has well-established local government structures, with teams of professionals responsible for protecting vulnerable children? These professionals have legal duties to safeguard children set out by Parliament. Their performance is regularly inspected, their work overseen by politicians elected in the local community. In a country with a police force that has a reputation for being free of corruption, certainly by international standards, why did so many police officers called on to help seem to blame the girls rather than the men who were drugging, raping and terrorising them? Why did politicians and professionals turn on those who tried to make the suffering of hundreds of children public? Andrew Norfolk from the British newspaper The Times was the first to bring it to public attention.
To talk about 1,400 being a conservative estimate for the number of children subjected to appalling abuse over a 16-year period in a town that only has a population of 250,000, people have been utterly horrified.
We'll be asking if it's possible to make sure that what happened in Rotherham doesn't continue in other towns and cities, where organised criminals abuse and traffic children, while those who should help are determined to look the other way. I'll be talking to a panel with direct experience in these areas, including Nazia Ahmed, a member of the British House of Lords, who was born in Mirpur in Pakistan, and Zalaka Ahmed, who founded and runs a charity for Muslim and black women who are facing domestic abuse, and a senior British police officer who ran the UK's Child Exploitation and Online Protection Centre. Rotherham, England, in the northern county of South Yorkshire, for years part of the industrial heartland of Britain before its economic decline in the 1980s and 90s. Rotherham's a mainly white town. 3% of its population is Pakistani and Kashmiri. The recent expose of abuse means Rotherham's name is associated with child exploitation on a huge scale. An estimated 1,400 children sexually exploited over 16 years. None of it properly tackled, because of incompetence, because of fears of being called racist. That was the judgment of a recent independent inquiry ordered by Rotherham Council into what happened to children in the town, the vast majority of them girls. Professor Alexis Jay wrote the report that shocked the world, with detailed descriptions of what happened to some of these girls.
It is hard to describe the appalling nature of the abuse the child victims suffered. They were raped by multiple perpetrators. They were trafficked to other towns and cities in the north of England. They were abducted, beaten and intimidated. There were examples of children being doused with petrol and threatened with being set alight. They were threatened with guns, made to witness brutally violent rapes, and threatened they would be the next if they told anyone.
And then they were pushing me head on the floor and that, and grabbing my neck and stuff and pulling me by my hair.
Emma, not her real name, was one of those abused. She describes the shocking attacks that began when she was 13 years old.
I was saying that I didn't want to do it and stuff, and he said, of course you want to do it, and that he don't like girls saying that no to him, and he don't accept it when they say no. He said that I were a white bitch and he'd had enough of me, and he punched me in the mouth.
That's a recording of Emma as a child. It was taken from a police video in 2003 when she reported what had happened to her. She was what's described as groomed, gradually befriended, in her case for a year, before the abuse began. Her story, as told to the BBC, is typical of many children exploited in the same way, who don't sense danger at first.
I'd started going to my local shopping centre and hanging around in a children's arcade. I wasn't doing anything I shouldn't be or going anywhere I shouldn't. And while I was there, I got approached by a group of young boys, which were still of school age. And I started to talk to them. And from then, I built a friendship with them. And as time went on, they started to introduce older people to me.
By the time Emma was assaulted by the older men, she considered some of them her friends.
After I'd been groomed for quite a while, I started going into Rotherham Town Centre and I was hanging around with grown men. And then when I was 13, I was sexually exploited by them. Up until this point, they'd never tried to touch me or they were my friends, as I saw it. Until one night, my main perpetrator raped me, quite brutally as well, in front of a number of people. And from then on, I would get raped once a week, every week. And then they started to make me have sex with whoever wanted to come and have sex with me.
Emma was treated by the child psychiatrist, Dr. Ilana Cariapa. She says the methods used by the men abusing Emma were like brainwashing.
She was totally enthralled to those people. They had her under their thumbs, you know, absolutely enslaving her to do everything that they wanted.
When Emma was reporting her abuse to the police in 2003, Rotherham Council was already aware that girls were being approached in shopping precincts, outside schools and children's homes, in parks and other public places, befriended and groomed for sex. In the late 1990s, the council had funded an organisation to do outreach work with young girls engaged in what was then described as child prostitution. The organisation provided a place where victims felt they would be heard and believed. Staff learned how girls were forced to have sex with groups of men in Rotherham and trafficked to UK cities, including Manchester, Bradford and Bristol, where they were shared around. Over a period of several years, the organisation passed information to police and social workers, but no one rescued these child victims. Isabel, not her real name, was among them. Although a third of the children groomed for abuse were living in children's homes and many came from troubled families, Isabel was with her parents and they tried to stop it.
My parents went to his house, to the police, to the authorities, and he just continued it. The authorities said because I was consenting to it, there was nothing that they could do.
The question of consent should never have arisen because at 14, Isabel was below the legal age when you can have sex in the United Kingdom. The English law doesn't allow consent to sexual activity to have effect when the person giving consent is underage. The man was 24, and by having sex with her, he was committing a criminal offence, statutory rape. Andrew Norfolk, the reporter from The Times, has studied some of the police files, and they reveal the attitudes among the officers.
The contempt with which the men who were abusing them treated them was not much worse than the attitude towards the more frontline police officers and senior counsellors when they were being told about this, and social services directors. To see, just this morning I was actually looking at a report about a girl who was 12 years old, and she was described in one blunt word, prostitute. They saw 12-year-old girls as prostitutes when what they were actually seeing, or should have been seeing, is abused children.
On some occasions, it was the girls and their families who were treated as the wrongdoers rather than the sex offenders. This man told the BBC what happened when he called the police to help him find his granddaughter, who, aged 13, was being sexually exploited by a gang of British Pakistani men.
She was found with four Asian men. She was arrested, charged with drunk disorderly. The men were released. She was charged. I mean, you can't make that up. Four adult males and a 13-year-old girl who'd been missing all day, charged.
Some girls appeared willing to keep on seeing the men who were sexually abusing them, and this was the main reason police offered for their refusal to act. But this grandfather says his granddaughter only continued to see her abusers because she was coerced.
She was jumping out of windows. She couldn't know where. She was uncontrollable. I mean, she'd kick her, fight her, bite her, out to get out because the fear what she had of this man, the main man, she was terrified because he told her they were going to kill her family. They were going to burn them out. It wasn't though she didn't ask. She wanted help. She was betrayed by all lot. Police, social services, just betrayed, absolutely betrayed.
Emma also continued to meet the men who groomed and abused her, but she says only because she too was afraid.
I had no choice, really, because they used to threaten to get my mum and rape me mum. So it was a thing of, in my mind, as a 13, 14-year-old, it was, well, if I don't go out and see them, then they're going to get my mum and gang rape her. Now, they gang rape me, so what stops them from doing that to my mum? If they wanted to harm somebody that I love to get to me in any way, they would do that if that's what it took.
I'm Winifred Robinson. You're listening to The Girls Britain Betrayed on the BBC World Service. In 2001, a researcher was employed to look into street prostitution in Rotherham. She was working for the UK Law and Order Department, the Home Office. It was part of a wider investigation. She identified 270 girls who were being sexually abused by groups of British Pakistani men. She compiled evidence about the men involved, their cars, their offences, and about the inaction on the part of social services.
The vast majority, the professional response was extremely poor. So you would have references to abusers being boyfriends or sweethearts. And one of the cases that I dealt with, a 14-year-old girl, pregnant for the second time, the social worker actively invited this man to her antenatal appointments as if this was some kind of a routine relationship. This was a guy that was 10 years older with a history of violent crime, allegations that he was involved extensively in the sexual exploitation of children in Rotherham, but also married with children of his own and a pregnant wife at the time.
In her report, the researcher described the abusers in Rotherham as Asian men. She was put under pressure to change her findings.
She said, you must never refer to that again. You must never refer to Asian men. And her other response was to book me on a two-day ethnicity and diversity course. I was subjected to the most intense personal hostility. There were threats made from a range of sources. I've never seen back covering like it. And I still feel extremely angry about that.
And there was worse. The researcher's files were stolen from her office. The report she prepared for the Home Office about the rape and trafficking of children in Rotherham was never published. According to Professor Alexis Jay, this episode allowed the abuse to flourish and set back any real effort to tackle it for years.
The response, in a nutshell, was that she was punished for speaking truth to power. If they had taken account of the content and been less concerned with their own images, then a great deal more might have been done at an earlier stage.
In the event, some of the missed opportunities to bring serious sex offenders to justice beggar belief.
I reported it to the police. I'd saved all my clothes that I'd been raped in, and I gave the police my clothes as evidence. They lost the clothing, so there was no evidence, said it was my word against his, and probably wouldn't result in a conviction anyway or even get to court. The men were parking outside my house, they were threatening my family, they was ringing my house phone, and they were quite dangerous men as well. And the police said they couldn't offer any protection, so because of that, I decided to drop charges.
When Isabel, age 14, was found almost naked in a house where a much older man was having sex with her, she was the one detained by police rather than him.
I was given a truncheon by him, and he told me to save it. So I was arrested for having a dangerous weapon.
When desperate parents went to the police, alleged fears of stoking racial tension seemed to be part of the excuse for doing nothing. This father's words are voiced by an actor. He went to the police and asked,
"Well, why can't you investigate what's going off now? And all I got after that were, 'I've told you, we cannot because of racial tension.' When this, it weren't about race, this. This is about what some adults were doing to some children, which left us devastated. Because we got nowhere else to turn."
Parents weren't the only ones drawing police attention to what was going on. In 2003, another researcher, Dr. Angie Heal, was looking into drugs crime for South Yorkshire Police and quickly found drug-dealing gangs were also sexually exploiting girls. She decided to write a report on what was happening. Her findings were also dismissed by the police. She wrote a second report describing the same abuse in 2006.
There was issues of ethnicity, and some people felt that ethnicity was a barrier to investigating, that it was seen to be too sensitive an issue.
The Times journalist Andrew Norfolk brought what was happening to national public attention when he was sent to report a murder trial. Laura Wilson had been groomed in Rotherham from the age of 11. She was murdered in 2010 when she was 17.
It was in the months after we published that story about that 17-year-old girl that I began to be contacted by people who were saying, "You have no idea the disgraceful failure of anybody in authority to get to grips with it."
Where do you think race comes into this and sensitivity about accusing people who belong to an ethnic minority?
There are some really important things to say before one even begins to address this. Firstly, the vast majority of sex crimes against children in this country are committed by white men, normally acting on their own. In terms of what we called street grooming, here for at least two decades in towns in the north and the Midlands of England, a pattern has developed. Groups of men who clearly felt it was somehow morally permissible, because these were respectable men, some of them, to do things with the sort of girls they were targeting that would have been unthinkable to members of their own community. You're talking, when you look at the North and Midlands of England, of what are often very conservative with the small C communities, largely drawn originally from a rural area of Pakistan-controlled Kashmir called Mirpur, where village cultural tradition, and more importantly, religious law, says that puberty is the age at which it becomes permissible for a girl to marry. There cannot have been the same sense of shame if you are passing a 12, 13-year-old child to your father, to your uncle, to your pals at the taxi rank, that there would have been in almost any other group of men one could imagine.
We don't have any problem, do we, in understanding that white people have racist attitudes towards black people and Pakistani people. But are you suggesting that some Pakistani men regard women perhaps as second-class citizens and white women perhaps as third-class citizens? Somehow fair game?
You are there directly quoting Baroness Wasi, a British-born Pakistani Muslim who grew up in a town in West Yorkshire. I am not suggesting there was a racist attitude in the men who were typically abusing white girls. What these men wanted was sex, and what was available were young kids hanging around on street corners in the evening, dressed in a way that would be unthinkable in small-c conservative Pakistani communities. Once they started getting away with what they were doing, decided that they might as well carry on.
In her official report, Professor Alexis Jay says that the methods used by politicians in Rotherham to try to reach out to ethnic minorities were also misguided.
If there had been direct engagement with the Pakistani heritage community and not through the conduit of the traditional, I have to say, male domination of the imams in the mosques and elected members in the council, a lot more might have been done much sooner.
So far, only five men have been convicted and jailed for child sex exploitation in Rotherham. Since the inquiry report was published in August 2014, only one local politician has resigned. The South Yorkshire Police have ordered an independent inquiry into their conduct over the 16 years that abuse went on unchecked. In Rotherham, lives have been damaged irreparably. The researcher who wrote the first report is still in contact with some of the girls.
They have gone through absolute hell. Some of them have never been able to gain a qualification. They've never been able to enter a long-term relationship. They have anger management problems, a lot of them self-harm. Some of them have total self-hatred. Their whole lives have been decimated. And everyone that I speak to still has a daily battle with that trauma.
We're not excellent parents. Nobody's excellent parents. And what we did is best. What can you do? Apart from ring police, and then they say they can't know until something happens. That's all you ever got from them.
I mean, if people are doing wrong, it doesn't matter what your colour, race, creed. If you're wrong, you're wrong. It's that simple, you know what I mean? You arrest them, prosecute and do your jobs. That's all I want. I just want justice for my granddaughter and all the kids in town, and the parents, because the parents have gone through a lot. Some of the parents, I mean, it's destroyed them. And people keep saying, what parents doing? I'll tell you what most parents were doing. They were worried sick.
The official inquiry into the Rotherham abuse has exposed the scale of child sexual exploitation in Britain. Andrew Norfolk, the Times reporter, believes attitudes and systems have changed in recent years.
There has already been a turning point in this country, whether we're talking about at a local authority level with councils and their social workers and the training to understand how this crime works, whether we're talking about allocation of resources both for councils and police forces, the number of officers dealing with a crime like this. For example, in South Yorkshire, where Rotherham is, in 2010, there were 3 officers across the whole force dealing with child sexual exploitation. There are more than 60 today, just 4 years later. Steps have been taken to improve matters, and as one result, you are seeing an extraordinary explosion in the number of criminal investigations and prosecutions in the past 3 years.
The Official Inquiry Report's author, Alexis Jay, says the lesson of Rotherham is that the authorities need to be proactive if children are to be protected from grooming and sexual exploitation now and in the future.
It's essentially a hidden problem. You need to seek it out and identify it, because the one thing that won't happen is that the individuals will come forward themselves easily and ask for help.
Being betrayed by the people that you thought were there to protect you, that you genuinely believed would protect you. Can you imagine what that does to a child? That is lifelong damage, and that could have been prevented.
The story of Rotherham is a grim one, but by no means unique to this northern town. I'm Winifred Robinson. In the next half hour, after the news, I'll be asking some people with personal experience of policing, politics and attitudes among British Pakistanis why this form of street grooming and organised abuse has arisen, and why police, politicians and care workers have been slow to combat it.
Documentaries on the BBC World Service.
Women's football has never been more popular.
If I could make a living out of playing soccer, that would be the dream, of course.
If I could make a career out of football and make a success out of it, I definitely would.
But it still seems to come second to the men's game.
The Santos club wanted to keep Neymar at Santos, and so they increased his salary and subsequently folded the entire women's team.
I'm Yvonne Macken, and for the BBC World Service, I'll be looking at the fortunes of women footballers across the globe.
It's unfortunate that the exposure and funding isn't enough.
What stands in the way of equality for the women's game?
The hijab ban prevented many other Muslim women from engaging in football.
The future of women's football.
Many fans actually have said they enjoy it more than the men's game.
Online from Tuesday at bbcworldservice.com.
I'm Winifred Robinson. Coming up after the news in The Girls Britain Betrayed, we'll be talking to a panel of guests to discuss how the authorities in Rotherham and English Town failed to protect hundreds of young girls from sexual abuse by British Pakistani men. Have British politicians, police and local authorities become so scared of criticising one of the country's ethnic groups that they turned a blind eye to serious crime? And is the sexual exploitation of children largely ignored, not only in Britain, but across the world?
BBC News with David Austin. Ukrainian forces and pro-Russia rebels have exchanged mortar fire in fighting for control of Donetsk airport in eastern Ukraine. There have also been brief skirmishes in the port city of Mariupol, where tensions are high after shelling overnight. European observers in Donetsk said the shelling was a violation of a ceasefire declared on Friday, but added that it was not sufficient to make the deal collapse. A new report by the human rights organization Amnesty International has accused all sides in the conflict in eastern Ukraine of committing war crimes. The report says Ukrainian forces have shelled neighborhoods indiscriminately, while pro-Russian rebels are reported to have carried out abductions, torture, and killings. American warplanes have carried out airstrikes against fighters from the Islamic State group near the Haditha Dam in western Iraq. Officials said the raids were in support of the Iraqi security forces. Seven men have been sentenced to death after the gang rape of four women outside the Afghan capital Kabul last month. Men in police uniform separated the women from their husbands, robbed and assaulted them as they returned from a wedding party. President Karzai has said he'll sign death warrants if their appeals fail. The government of Somalia has sacked its chief of intelligence, who it said had proved ineffective. Abdullahi Mohamed Ali had only been in the job for 2 months. The Indian Prime Minister Narendra Modi has visited the flood-hit state of Kashmir to see for himself the devastation caused by the heavy monsoon rains. Mr. Modi promised almost $200 million in aid and compensation. Officials say the floods have killed about 300 people. Seven men have been arrested in Egypt over a video supposedly showing a gay marriage on a boat on the Nile. The state prosecutor has ordered physical examinations of the men to see if they should face charges of inciting debauchery and spreading images that violate public decency. BBC News.
I'm Winifred Robinson. This is The Girls Britain Betrayed, a report and discussion about the grooming of young girls by groups of British Pakistani men in the northern English town of Rotherham. An official inquiry published this month describes how, for 16 years, the authorities failed to protect an estimated 1,400 girls. What part does religion or race play in these crimes and the failure to punish them? And is the scandal an isolated one? Or is the sexual exploitation of children much more widespread than we previously thought, both here in this country and worldwide? With me to discuss the evidence from Rotherham are Fleur Strong. She speaks for the UK charity Parents Against Child Sexual Exploitation. It helps parents who are trying to protect their children from grooming and abuse. It was set up in 1996 by a woman whose daughter was groomed, abused and murdered. Salaha Ahmed founded and runs an organisation in Rotherham that works with black and ethnic minority women who are facing domestic violence and abuse. Jim Gamble formerly ran the UK government's Child Exploitation and Online Protection Centre and is currently working on child protection in London. Nazir Ahmed is a member of the UK House of Lords. In the early 1990s, he was elected to the local government in Rotherham. He was chairman of the Labour Party there for a time. The party has been in control of Rotherham Council for the past 40 years. Welcome to you all. Let's start then with a question at the heart of this story. The inquiry that's just been published says that 3% of people in Rotherham are Pakistanis, and yet when it comes to this kind of abuse where the initial contact with the girls is made in a public place, all of the perpetrators were Pakistanis and all of the girls were white. So how do you explain that? Lord Ahmed.
It's appalling, and it's a despicable act against these innocent young girls. I don't think there's any explanation whatsoever. It's criminality. A lot of it is based with the fact that there was drugs and drug-related sort of activities, whether it's theft, robbery, alcohol. Young people who have not been in control with their families, but we notice from mid-90s there was these gang culture emerging in Rotherham. And sadly, the community was not aware. And I think that there are a number of issues. First of all, parents who failed their own children but failed the community. There is the community, which I talk about in my articles in relation to the leadership that mosques and community leaders that could have provided this. The local authority. I think the schools have responsibility of protection and detection at early stage. And then the police, who should have done the prosecution. unfortunately, in my view, all of us together, we have failed these 1,400 girls and probably more. It's a very sad and shameful day for Rotherham.
Flo Strong, how would you explain it, the fact that all the perpetrators in this instance are Pakistanis?
I think the first thing I'd say is that although it does highlight the 1,400 girls were white, in this particular report, I think there are probably many other girls from different communities who are just not identified or who have not yet come forward. I think to focus and to say that it is only white girls who are being exploited by Pakistan.
No, nobody's saying that, but they're only white in this instance. I just wonder if you have any insight into that.
I think it's probably linked into the communities and the way that the girls were accessible to the men during the schools and that the places that the girls were targeted in the shopping areas and so forth. But my personal view, although I consider the report from Rotherham very, very important, I think there is a real risk that we are focusing on one aspect of the report and one aspect of child sexual exploitation. And I think there is a risk that the vulnerability of the children and what's happening across the UK and across the world is lost.
I'll come on to that, but I want to deal with this first because it has attracted a lot of attention. Salha Ahmed, how do you explain it?
Since the report came out on last Tuesday, we've had at least three young Pakistani young women who've shared sexual grooming, which is sexual and physical violence that's been carried out to them. Now, they've not identified themselves in terms of the names or the families that they're with, but they've shared what's happened with them. And in terms of the details, in a way, they're parallel to what the white young girls went through. But the difference is that it's the first time these girls have come forward and shared. So there is a whole issue that in terms of sexual grooming, that it's happening to all sections of our communities, but we're only focusing on those that have come forward. In terms of the question about, yes, in Rotherham at this moment in time, the men that have been sent to prison or identify happen to have been Asian men, Pakistani men. But like Fleur was saying, if you look at this issue far and wide in this country or worldwide, men who abuse will come from all different communities and races. So it's not something just that's particularly to the Pakistani community.
You don't think there's anything in the culture among Pakistani men that meant that it was more likely that they would target white women in the way they did in Rotherham, Salha?
I mean, I'm a 50-year-old British-born Pakistani heritage woman, and in terms of the Pakistani culture that I've grown up, it's no more sexist than the white culture that I'm surrounded with. And if you look at, for example, the generic white culture, and you look at the effects of the porn industry, where currently the porn industry targets 7, 8, 9-year-old boys because the assumption is that if you target them at that age with free porn, then by the time they're earning their own money, they will actually buy into that. Now, the overall degenerative effect that's happening in terms of male and female relationships is quite profound.
Another aspect of this story that will amaze a lot of listeners is the fact that the authorities in general are determined not to appear racist, not to offend a British minority. Why is that? Jim Gamble.
Well, because institutional racism has been a label that's been hung on a lot of police forces. And just let me touch on this as well, because having been a chief police officer and having had the lead for domestic violence as well as child protection, I think there are real issues about South Asian culture when it comes to traditions of honour and shame. I think, you know, my experience was it was very difficult for women and victims from those communities to come forward. And many of the community representatives at that time that I spoke to would have reflected that. That's not to say that other communities don't have issues where it's hard to engage the authorities or police. But we've become so sensitive, even back then in 2004 and 5, people were saying we're not delivering the intervention that we should for fear of offending people in the community. So if I was in the police in Rotherham, and because intelligence told me that young Asian men were abusing white girls, if I was stopping cars of young Asian men in certain areas at night, would there be an allegation that we were behaving in a racist manner? You know, the reality check here is, yes, there would. And if I was a Pakistani man who was involved in grooming a girl, the first thing I would do, the minute I was stopped, would be to claim racism as a means to divert. So I'm not saying that the police should have taken, you know, notice of that. I'm saying they should be sensible and sensitive to culture, but where a child is at risk, they should engage. I don't think this is a problem which pertains solely to any community. I think, quite rightly, I mean, my concern would be, where are the white men? in the Rotherham area, because this won't be isolated to one group. But this is grabbing the headlines, and that could divert attention from the bigger issues.
Can I just say that I think if you look at stop and search figures, whether it is in relation to terrorism, anti-terrorism or drugs and other issues, then you have ethnic minority figures which are sky high comparative to the white indigenous community. So I don't think that's an excuse. That's number one. Second question that you were putting to Zuleikha Ahmed, I think if you look at the BBC itself, you know, if you look at Jimmy Savile, would you say there's a culture in BBC that these sex predators were doing this to vulnerable girls and some of the DJs
yes,
as well.
I think there was a culture that permitted people in positions of authority,
even MPs,
to do
and
things
lords
that other people were not
Commons.
Allowed to do. So culture is important.
Well, then I think this is a new phenomenon of the Pakistani young men or Pakistani men, and we really need to do some investigations and find out why it is.
Just let me come back on a couple of those things. First of all, the stop and search figures, you know, absolutely it's wrong that there's a disproportionate representation.
That
but
is
that
where
informs
the British police
thinking.
Stop and search people who they suspect of crime.
Correct. And it's disproportionately representative of young black males in London. And that is wrong. But that is the reality that informs police thinking because they don't want that allegation made. I'm not saying that it's right or appropriate or excuses their lack of intervention. I'm putting it in context. And I have to say, you know, you talk about culture. If we want to get to the bottom of this, we have to look at the anomaly that is here, that we have a group from a particular community with a particular background who are represented across a range of UK geography with the same kind of offending patterns in girls. If we want to ignore that, then there's a major problem. Of course, look at Savile, look at power, look at influence, look at wealth. And in Northern Ireland, there's a major investigation going on at the minute, and there's not an Asian person, you know, inside of it, and it has the same issues. But we've got to look at why, in some areas, people will use a perverse view of their own culture, which is honourable, to do something wrong.
Can I come in there just to challenge that slightly? In terms of this issue, we've not just got young girls who are coming forward now, but if you talk to women within the Pakistani community, going back 20 years, 30 years, they will share sexual grooming abuse issues that happened within the communities, for example, in Britain. So to make this argument into a simplistic one, which is that, for example, Pakistani men just target white girls because there's an issue of lack of respect, I challenge that.
That's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is actually underwritten by what you said at the beginning. There's a reticence in coming forward. That's been the issue within a community which, you know, has a tradition of honour and shame. It has been difficult for victims of that community, offended against by their own community, to come forward and share that because of the way it will be viewed, in my experience.
I think the thing around culture is that within the Pakistani community, you have to look at it from the point of view of, well, why is there child sexual exploitation, or in some countries it's called commercial sexual exploitation, around the world? So why is it that there's a very similar sort of modus operandi in Peru? Why is it that you have it in Australia? Why is it that you have it across the world? And it may be different ethnic groups who are grooming and sexually exploiting other different ethnic groups, or it may be within the same group, but it's happening across the world. So you can't say it's particularly linked to a particular culture within the UK. Actually, the big thing which I think has been constantly missed by this, because of the way that we will fixate on race at times, is the fact that the most common feature is around the vulnerability of the girls, yeah, and the way that the families and the girls are stigmatised and are normally blamed for the sexual exploitation, and that there is a certain type of family which people always look to call dysfunctional or chaotic, as if that means it's acceptable for them to be sexually exploited and blamed for the crime. That's what's missing, and that's what's the common feature. If you look across the world, it is normally families who are blamed and the children themselves who are blamed, because they're not the right type of victim.
Lord Ahmed, can I ask you, do local politicians hold back from criticising British Pakistanis simply because they need their vote?
You know, I've heard this argument from London before, but certainly in Rotherham, I don't think that this would have been an issue at all, because Rotherham is very predominantly Labour. They've never depended on the Asian vote. And I know many of the councillors who are honest and very strong. I don't know. I think when I've read the report and many of the other reports in the local newspapers, it suggests that they were advised not to mention anything and they were advised not to discuss it. And I think that somebody made this decision outside just to deal with it in secret and in confidence, because there have been a number of reports. And I think really we really need a proper investigation into the police, the social services, and also the local authority members as well. Why was it kept secret? Why didn't the community know? Why was this not... I mean, look, I'm a member of the House of Lords. I was the first Asian councillor in Rotherham. I live in Rotherham. I have my children, grandchildren who go to local schools. Nobody mentioned this to me until the first persons, those boys were actually... convicted and went to prison, and then the report and the Times report that actually highlighted a lot of this, and then of course the Panorama, the BBC and everything else. But I only learnt through media, not through local authority or the police.
Can I just interrupt there, because the charity PACE has been working in Rotherham since 2001, and I know that we, through the Home Office report that was actually commissioned and worked through the charity that was mentioned in the Rotherham report published last week, I know that people did know, and I know that people, the trustees and parents, they went and spoke to people, they asked for help, councillors knew, MPs knew, police officers knew, social workers knew. You can't say that Rotherham didn't know. It was an open secret. But the most important thing was that it was just an accepted secret and people chose not to do anything about it.
Because if you acknowledge it's happening, Jim Gamble, then you have to do something about it, and it's very difficult.
Well, a lot of people chose not to acknowledge it's happening, and I find it very difficult when people who are local politicians who are engaged in national levels of government with everything that's been going on over the last few years say they didn't know. And I wonder, you know, when you check their record, how many times they have raised the challenge in council and raised the challenge in either House of Parliament. The issue, we're skirting around this, and we're not going to improve if we continue to lay a veneer over this. The fact of the matter is, proximity is a key issue. The proximity of the victim and the proximity of the offenders. Proximity is key, because if I'm an Irish man and I grow up in an area, my friends are generally going to be Irish, we're going to hang out together, and when the opportunity arises, we're going to engage, perhaps if we're that way minded. This has happened with large groups of Pakistani men. You know, there is no way I'm saying this is a Pakistani phenomenon, but what I am saying is we need to find out why. And simply saying it happens everywhere else, that's just not good enough. This has happened too often. The pattern has been repeated. Now, if you and I have worked around the world, and I accept if you fly to Thailand today and you walk into any bar, the men around the, you know, that bar exploiting those Thai girls will be white. So it's not about that. It's about understanding what happened, why it was allowed to be sustained for so long, what issues you can deal with within the community, how you can engage directly with the community, with imams, with others, but making a change, because the rhetoric that we continue to spew out over this, you know, will keep us going for so long, won't help victims, and you know what, in a week and a half we won't be talking about this anymore.
You're listening to The Girls Britain Betrayed with me, Winifred Robinson. My guests are Fleur Strong from the parents' charity PACE UK, Nazir Ahmed, a former Labour politician and a member of the House of Lords, Salaha Ahmed, who supports women who are facing domestic abuse, and Jim Gamble, he's a former senior police officer now working in child protection. Let's move on to the disdainful attitudes towards women that have emerged across all the agencies in their dealings with the victims of this abuse. Jim Gamble, you were a police officer for a very long time. Do you recognise the attitudes?
Yes. I think it would be disingenuous to say that I don't. Some of it is about ignorance. Some of it is about preconceived ideas that these children are promiscuous. You know, and lots of people who'll be listening to this show will be saying, well, that's terrible. They'll be the same people who walk down the street talking or gossiping to their friend, saying, do you see that wee girl such and such? She's awful. She's doing this with these boys and that. You know, so the police don't have the excuse that perhaps a member of the public would have. But I believe the service has improved. I believe it continues to improve, but it's no good not acknowledging that some people were ignorant, some people were too politically sensitive, and others viewed these children as part of the problem themselves. And that's where I agree with Lord Ahmed. We need to have an independent review of what the police did and why, and we need to get to the heart of these cultural issues within institutions like the police.
Fleur Strong, why are the girls being blamed rather than the much older men abusing them?
I think within the United Kingdom, it's actually been evidenced in recent surveys such as YouGov, there is a perception that the child and the families are in part to be blamed for the sexual exploitation of them, of their child or of themselves. And the reason for that is that there was a view that is getting better, as Jim said, that victims should not be seen to be blamed. But there is a view that in a way they brought it upon themselves, that it was a lifestyle choice, that they were consensual to the abuse. And that the one of the big things that people don't understand, and as Jim highlighted with the police, people don't understand, why will a child return to their abuser? Why will a child go back to a situation where they are being raped? They won't understand the grooming process of a child. They won't understand the control and manipulation that there is over that child by the abuser. And they won't understand the complexities of how this type of crime will go on for years and years and years and cause family breakdown, and will basically, the effect, the long-term effect on a child will basically live with them until they are in an adult. And we have families where it is actually intergenerational now. So the children who were abused maybe 10 or 12 years ago have now got children themselves in Rotherham, Leeds, other places, and now their children are being groomed by the next generation of that gang.
So, Laha, do you recognise this tendency to blame the women who are being abused rather than their abusers?
We live in a society where there's a culture around women blaming and male excusing. And that doesn't matter, you know, whether it's Asian, Pakistani, white, it crosses all communities and cultures. And that's whether it's domestic violence, whether that's trafficking, whether it's prostitution, sex industry or sexual grooming. One of the things for me is the links in terms of sexual grooming and the whole issue around prostitution or women who work in the sex industry. If you look at women who work in the sex industry, it's very, very similar in that it's often girls who've been abused at home, who've left, become homeless at a very early age, who are then have a boyfriend who grooms them for a number of years, and then they enter the market in terms of selling sex for a living. Yet in terms of as a society and as a country, we still see that as prostitution and as a profession and as something that women choose to do. And I think for me, those ideas filter into how people view sexual grooming.
Lord Ahmed, why do you think it is that the authorities are blaming the girls rather than the much older men abusing them?
I agreed with all the speakers. I think there is an issue in relation to training of these officers. But I also think that we should look at the education department as well, because they have responsibility of detecting some of this on day-to-day basis. I'm sorry to say, but social services and the children's department in Rotherham within it has really failed. And they that's why I keep saying that we need to have investigation. I really don't know. And I think it's time that somebody actually done some research and probably even prosecute some of those people who have not taken any action.
But Lord Ahmed, we've had so many inquiries, haven't we? So many looks at it,
Then let's have a criminal investigation when people are prosecuted for failing to do their job and allowing criminality and the terrible things that have been happening to these 1,400 girls.
If that were the case, then a lot of your Labour colleagues in Rotherham would be prosecuted, wouldn't they, along with the council officers and the education officials?
First of all, I don't know, but whoever, I really don't care, whoever was responsible and who failed to do their job and did not protect, they have responsibility to protect. If they've not done the job, then I think they should be prosecuted. It really doesn't matter who it is, whether it is my colleagues or whether it is some other person, but they had a duty and they didn't do it.
Can I just say, links into that, that it is very important to realise that this isn't just happening in Rotherham. It is happening across the whole of the United Kingdom, and it will be happening in every country across the world in one way or another. And that sort of the constant sort of scenario of saying particular people are to blame. Yes, absolutely, there are particular people, police officers and social workers, but there is very much still a culture which we're not addressing, which is around, basically, it's around male power, which is one of the big themes that comes through in this, which is linked into sexual crime. And it is a much, much bigger issue than Rotherham. And as much as the Rotherham report has been incredibly important, I am still very concerned that it is taking us down a route linked into child sexual exploitation, which is not the main focus, which is it's around victims, the vulnerability of victims, why don't they disclose, and the whole approach of encouraging young people to come forward and also to prevent it happening in the first place.
Jim Gamble, some of the police officers apparently thought that the word of the girls would never stand up in court because they were so young, because they had been using drink and drugs. And yet some forces have huge success with prosecutions of this kind, don't they?
And they were wrong. And you're always wrong to make an assumption. When you're dealing in child protection, it has to be early intervention. But let's put this in some kind of complex context. Context is key. Where the children grow up, how they're supported by parents or not, the influences that they're engaged by. Domestic violence has a huge part to play. Very often this has got more to do with abusive relationships than organised criminality. There are issues about access and influence from pornography and expectations and things that people expect. And it's not about the pornographic industry, I believe, and I've never seen evidence of it, pushing deliberately at nine-year-olds. It's about the fact that it's omnipresent and it's easy to get to. But we get this cycle of blame. The people to blame are the sexual predators that engage our children. The system itself is confused and in chaos because we apply labels. The trafficking label, fundamentally unhelpful when it comes to this. This is child abuse. We introduce labels to suit government departments. We introduce approaches to suit the configuration of serious organised crime approaches to this, which are wrong. Because this is a much bigger, much, much bigger issue than simply what's happening in Rotherham. But we need to recognise that. But we need to recognise it in a way that's healthy and constructive, not totally defensive from one community or another. And victims' voices, are we seeing children? Are we hearing them? And are we helping them?
Is a factor the sexualisation of children in Western culture, the revealing nature of the clothes sold as suitable for girls, the fact that indecent images of girls and women, they're easily available to boys and men?
My answer to that would be, well, why have we had child sexual exploitation for so many years? Mm. This has been going on for decades and decades, and why is it across the world? It may well be part of the picture, and that's been highlighted in recent research, but I still think you've got to get down to the absolute fundamentals, as Jim just highlighted, about why is it happening, how can we prevent it, and the statutory organisations, when should they be intervening and what should they be doing?
I always challenge that when I'm asked that question, in that if you look at parts of the world where women cover, for example, the levels of sexual grooming and abuse are just as high as what we're uncovering in the UK. So it's a irrelevance, in a way, of what a woman is wearing, whether it's a miniskirt or whether she's fully clothed. If an abuser is going to abuse, who will abuse her?
I don't think we're talking simply about what someone's wearing. We're talking about sexualised behaviour. So, you know, as young people begin to grow up, you know, my daughter, who's now a social worker, when she was younger, Miley Cyrus was Sweetness and Light and Disney. Miley Cyrus decided to rebrand herself, you know, as the sex symbol, you know, twerking on stage. So young girls at that stage, they're influenced by their example to think, well, maybe that's what's time for me now to do. Add that to the influence about male power, control, the negative influence that you see from so many walks of life, and the access to hardcore pornography, which is not a normal expectation about sex, and you have influences that work negatively on young boys and young girls and create a very difficult situation for parents. And in an age of social media, I believe it's accelerated this. I don't believe it's created it, but it has undoubtedly accelerated it, and there's greater access and greater opportunity for the predator.
We've come to the end of The Girls Britain Betrayed. I'd like to thank our guests, Fleur Strong, Lord Ahmed, Jim Gamble, Salaha Ahmed, for taking part, and to you all for listening.